You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Alexander Hamilton. By now, almost everyone in the English-speaking world knows that name and knows a little bit about that historical figure, not because of the work he did helping to build our nation several centuries ago, but because of the musical Hamilton, which shook the culture and broke people open to a new form of creativity, music, even to new ways of expression. Since it debuted in 2015, it has gained incredible accolades and launched the careers of many people we had never heard of really before. The most obvious example, of course, is Lin-Manuel Miranda, who created this phenomenon and who is now a household name. Hamilton is returning to Detroit this November and December at the Fisher Theater, and that is part of the rebirth, I guess, of live theater after the pandemic. Think of the last time you went and sat in a theater with your community and watched a play or a musical. It has been so long for all of us because of COVID-19. Here to talk about the return of Hamilton to Detroit, its meteoric rise, and the return of live theater nationwide is Hamilton's producer and Oak Park native, Jeffrey Seller. Jeffrey, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen, and thank you. I'm listening to you, and I just got the chills from just the notion of being able to go to the Fisher Theater, walk through the gorgeous arcade at the Fisher Building, and walk into those golden seats and watch a show at the Holidays, which I remember right. So well, because I was 13 years old when my parents splurged to get tickets for Annie so we could watch it over the holidays. So it's so great. Hamilton's coming this November, December. Yeah. How do you like that?
That's such a wonderful reference, because I assume that you and I are in the same general age group. But that's such a familiar reference for me. I remember my school took the entire third grade to see Annie at the Fisher that same year.
It was the
first Broadway show I ever saw, and it completely changed the way I thought about that form of expression. And I mean, I think for those of us who grew up in Metro Detroit in the 70s and 80s, that's a seminal moment for this kind of art. So it's great to hear that it meant something to you too. So Hamilton just, of course, blasted off into the culture and completely changed the culture, I think, with the many things it does and the many ways it kind of breaks conventions and reframes our thinking. And of course, that hasn't stopped. I want to just take a moment to have you talk about whether you expected all of this and whether you thought, you know, 7 years later, we would still be as excited to sit and watch this incredible work of art on stage.
I always have to confess, I don't know. And what I mean by that is, let's go back. Did I think Rent would become the kind of socio-political entertainment phenomenon that it became in the 90s? No. I was friends with Jonathan Larson. He was working on his rock musical based on La Boheme in the East Village, where AIDS replaced tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. And I hoped it would play at a 300-seat theater downtown in the East Village somewhere. I had no idea that Rent would rise to that level of cultural integration. And with Hamilton, I absolutely knew that it was of a quality that was in the stratosphere, but I knew it would have success. Did I know that it would become a national trust, if I can use that word. And I'm only using that because I'm quoting former head of the National Endowment of the Arts, Rocco Landsman, who said to me in the first year of the show, well, it's a national trust. Everybody owns Hamilton, Jeffrey.
Wow. Wow.
And what he was saying, is it's all of our show. It's our story. And I think that if I had to put one word on its form and its function, I would say it's inclusiveness. That here we have the history of the founding of America through a function in which everybody's included, where Black people, Brown people, Asian Americans, everybody can look on that stage and see themselves and say, that's my story too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's, I mean, that's a huge part of the power it has in the culture. I also want to pause just a sec and talk about this broader return of live theater and what that means, not just to Hamilton, but to Broadway and to all of us. Like I said in the open, you know, it's been 2 years since any of us really could do this. It's like a piece of our lives that melted away, and now we get to reform it in some way.
Well, it's a cause for celebration and jubilation and elation. I myself was at the Broadway musical company last night with my partner Josh and my good friend Cynthia O'Neill. And how wonderful was it to be able to sit in a theater again, surrounded by other theater goers, and watch these spectacular artists on stage bringing this show to life, and then being able to actually go out to dinner after. And this was a date we postponed and we postponed and we postponed because for so long we couldn't see the show. And then Omicron came, so we couldn't go to restaurants. And just now were we feeling safe enough to say, okay, let's go, let's do the whole experience. And you know what? If I can use the cliche of Stephen Sondheim and his big song, Being Alive, from that show, being able to do all of these things makes us feel more alive again.
Yeah.
And I want to say that if we look back 2 years now in the first months of the pandemic, I did ask myself, is this a point of no return for
Is this over?
Civilization?
Yeah.
Are we going to now, are we beset now with these viruses and pathogens that are going to change the way we all live forever and put all of us in our isolated bubbles? And if so, my whole career, my avocation and my vocation will cease to exist because we won't be able to assemble anymore. And I know I'm speaking right now in a dour way, but this is not an impossibility. And the perseverance and the hard work of so many people in our society has caused us to be able to go out now and go to those restaurants and go to those bars and go to the Super Bowl or the Michigan game or the DSO. And that's what makes me feel so alive, when I can go to all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with Jeffrey Seller, producer of Rent, Avenue Q, In the Heights, and of course, the beloved musical Hamilton. We're talking about the return of live theater after the pandemic, the return of Hamilton to Detroit, which is going to happen in November and December, just in time for the holiday season. We're also talking about this profound influence that Jeffrey, who's a native Detroiter, has had over Broadway over many years. We'd love to hear from you during the conversation as well. Call and tell us how much you love the musical Hamilton. Why? What does that musical mean to you? What did you draw from the many different things it's doing while it's unfolding on stage, the many different ideas it is putting in front of us, the conventions that it broke when it opened in 2015. Are you excited for the return of live theater now that the pandemic is at least more under control than it was when it started? What are you looking forward to going to see? What theater is your favorite here in Metro Detroit? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter, put your comments there, and we can work you into the conversation. Let's go to the phones here. Eric Williams, a friend of the show in Detroit. Eric, what's up?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. So I lived in New York for 20 years, and one of the biggest, you know, pleasures I had was going to Broadway and off-Broadway shows. And I had the, you know, good fortune to see the original cast of Hamilton. One of the things that makes Hamilton stand out so much is sort of the colorblind casting. A month ago, I was in, visiting friends in New York, and I went and saw Chicago. And when the person playing Matron Mama Morton came out, my first thought was, oh my God, this woman would make an amazing George Washington.
So oh, wow.
Have you ever considered, sort of cross-casting as far as gender as well? And actually, the person is a native Detroiter. So it was actually, which is why I remembered it stuck out. So I was just wondering what his thoughts are on that kind of development.
That is a really great question, Eric. Jeffrey, one of the things that, you know, I think that Hamilton, of course, has made a mark in doing is breaking those sort of stereotypical ideas that we have of who can play what role and what it means to become another character. Could George Washington be played by a female actor?
Thank you, Eric. And I'm so curious what brought you back to Detroit, but I guess this, I'm not here to interview you, you're here to interview me. But I just love the notion of a Detroiter going to New York for 20 years and coming back to Detroit. I hope that's all for good and positive reason to help rise of Detroit. But you're bringing up a great point. And it is something in which we've had some discussions about it. I've had several great friends, women friends who are performers who have asked if they could try out for King George III. And there was another great Broadway actress who I asked her if she would ever consider doing Angelica Schuyler. And she said, no, but I'll consider Burr. And wow. And I appreciated that. Here's the biggest question with regard to that. The octaves of the voice and the keys of the songs.
Sure.
And a Broadway show sometimes will make a modification for an actor where they'll take a song up a half step or down a half step, but you can't redo the whole song for a different voice. So whether or not we would find a woman who could do the baritone of
who could intone, yeah.
Washington. The answer is I don't know. And I think that conversation is alive, and I think we're going to keep having it. And Hamilton's going to have a long life. So I'm not ruling any possibilities out.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Jeffrey Seller about the return of Hamilton, the return of live theater, and how theater has changed over the time that he's been working on Broadway. I want to continue to hear from you as well. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to social media and put comments there, and we can include you. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. My guest is Jeffrey Seller, who is a producer of Rent, Avenue Q, In the Heights, and Hamilton, all very large Broadway hits. He's also a native Detroiter. We're talking about the return of live theater and the return of Hamilton. It's coming back to Detroit this fall, just in time for the holiday season. I want to hear from you about how excited you are about the return of Hamilton and the return of theater. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. Jeffrey, I want to talk a little about your career on Broadway. I mean, it's really at the intersection of a lot of incredible work, Rent, Hamilton, and now Tick, Tick, Boom, the last of, you know, which highlights the life and work of Jonathan Larson. Can you talk more about Larson and what he meant to you? You brought that up a bit earlier, but we didn't stop to dive a little deeper into that.
Yeah, with pleasure. When I was 25, I was working for a Broadway producer named Barry and Fran Weisler, Broadway producers. And I was a booker. I was responsible for booking the national tours. And I was a middle manager, maybe a little less. And I hated my job. I wanted to be a producer. I didn't know how to figure out how to make the leap from booking to producing. I had just broken up from a six-year relationship. I was lonely. I felt as a 25-year-old that I was a little bit at sea. And a friend invited me to come to see a rock monologue that later, of course, became Tick, Tick, Boom. It was called Boho Days. And we went to this tiny performance space on the Upper West Side. There was a brick wall, there was a band set up, and I'm sitting in a 100-seat theater, and out comes this tall, lanky guy with curly brown hair and big ears and a floppy hat. And he starts this show called Boho Days, which is all about his crisis as a 30-year-old composer of rock musicals that nobody wants to produce. And his crisis, should he stay with a girlfriend who he knows isn't right for him, but he's afraid of breaking up because he's afraid of being lonely. And his crisis, which is, do I take a job at an advertising agency and become a copywriter so I can actually pay the rent every month and not live in an apartment in which the bathtub is really in the kitchen? And he's telling the story through a series of songs that is making the hair on my arm stand up. And his show, I felt like, how does this man know my story? And I've never met him before. And I was exhilarated. I was gutted. I was thrilled. I was crying. And after I saw the show, I was invited to a little party, and I saw him with some people around him, and I was a little shy about meeting him. So the next day I wrote him a letter and I said, my name is Jeffrey Seller. I want to be a producer and I want to produce your shows. And that was in 1990. And though I was a friend, obviously Lynn is my dear friend, and gave him all the support I could, including I gave him a tape of Jonathan performing all of the original Boho Days. And I seem to be the only one on earth who had one. I didn't have anything to do with the movie, except that after Jonathan and I met, we started talking about musicals, and he wanted me to try to produce Tick, Tick, Boho Days off Broadway. And the first thing I said to him was, well, you should change the name to Tick, Tick, Boom, because that's the motif of the show. And he did. And the second thing I said is, you got to lose that opening number called Boho Days and write a new opening number. And then he wrote 3090, which is still the opening number of the show. So, you know, Jonathan and I became friends in 1990. He was as passionate as I was about the American musical theater. He was even more critical than I was about the state of the American musical theater, in which he would say, about the shows that were on Broadway then, which were primarily the British blockbusters, Cats, mm-hmm. Phantom, Les Mis. And he would say, those aren't our stories. That's not our music. those aren't our people. Those aren't our characters. And he wanted to do something different. And what's amazing is that when he and I met, he wasn't ready to write a Broadway musical and I wasn't ready to produce one. And our relationship spanned, you know, it spanned 6 years. And it culminated with Rent. And it's still upsetting to talk about because of course it only spanned 6 years because as many know, he died of an aortic aneurysm 3 hours after the dress rehearsal of Rent at New York Theater Workshop in 1996.
Wow. Yeah.
So I want to also say for all of you folks who are watching Tick, Tick, Boom, it's such a beautiful movie in the way that it is able to wrap the basic outline of Tick, Tick, Boom, the musical, around a biopic about Jonathan's life for just that moment in time, which Lynn did so, so adroitly. And it's such a, it's so beautiful and so beautiful to see Jonathan come to life in that way as an artist.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Donna on Twitter writes, heading to Donna Summer musical tomorrow, my first real outing. I'm beyond excited to see live people on and off the stage, along with the beautiful Fisher. Being a virtual teacher from home since the beginning of the pandemic has made me a little crazy, to say the least. I'm sure you're going to have a great time, Dawn. Let's go to Diana on the east side. Diana, what's on your mind?
Well, good morning there. Thank you very much. And to Donna, I just bought my ticket yesterday for the Donna Summer.
You're going too.
I'm going. But what I wanted to say was that I saw Hamilton. I was delighted to be there. It was in the sixth row, maybe too close, because the music, the orchestra was so loud. And, of course, the actors speak very rapidly, so we couldn't understand what they were saying. Huh. And I thought, maybe it's just me. But then the people I was with, they said, no, we can't hear it. The music's too loud. And then we were talking to people afterwards, and they were all saying, we thought it was just us. But yeah, the music was so loud.
Oh, no.
I want to go again. I'm going again. But I don't know what has to be done. I don't know. But it was just so loud, and I really want to be able to hear what they're saying.
Well, Diana, I'm glad you called because we've got the producer here on the line. You know, I imagine that's a challenge, is that, you know, you're moving this thing around. It's being performed in really different places, and they all have different acoustics. The Fisher is really different from other theaters.
Well, Diana, first of all, if you're going to go again, I'm so thankful you're going to go again. And what I want to say is, you know, many people who go to see shows like this have an interesting dialogue prior in which some friends say, listen to the CD first and read the lyrics because it's going to increase your appreciation. And others say, don't do it so it all happens fresh. And certainly in the same way that so much of the great rap and hip hop music that has been created over the last now almost 40 years. That's really almost how, you know, I mean, hip hop really does start 40 years ago now.
That's right.
Yeah. Repeated listenings always bring more information because that's the nature of hip hop, right? Of rap music, that it comes so fast. So I'm thrilled you're going to go again. And my guess is that it is impossible for us to equalize every seat in a theater. So our sound designers go to different areas and, you know, sometimes you're sitting in the front and actually it's a little, you can't hear it enough because the speakers are giving more to the back. And that's variability. And I thank you for your patience. And all I else can say is I'll bet you they were having the same conversation when folks in Greece were going to see Antigone right. In those big amphitheaters that didn't even have amplification yet.
Yeah, right. Again, Diana, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Ken in Troy. Ken, I've got about a minute left, but go ahead.
Sure, real quick. I'm wondering if the portrayal of Bob Dylan by Kate Blanchett and actually by a small black kid who I think was also intended to somewhat portray Robert Johnson, in I'm Not There in 2007 was at all influential with Hamilton?
That's a really great question, Ken. And I love I'm Not There, and I thought Cate Blanchett was astonishing in that role. Jeffrey, I wonder if that was part of the influence of the idea.
What it's a fascinating illusion. I think that every time an artist breaks the form and does something different, they're contributing to a landscape that gets other artists to break the form. So mm-hmm. though I don't think that particular movie necessarily was in Lynn's head or Tommy's head as they were casting, those are the expressions that help us to leap forward as artists. Yeah. When someone, you know, breaks it and says, let's do it this way. So that was a good leap forward. And then, you know, Hamilton, another one. The other thing I wanted to say, because Mr. Williams, the other caller, had brought this mm-hmm. up about colorblind casting. What I mm-hmm. want to say about that is actually it's very color conscious casting.
Right. This was intentional.
You know, we're giving it great thought and great consideration.
Yeah.
And that is to the benefit of all.
Yeah. Okay. Jeffrey Seller, producer of Hamilton. Great to talk to you again. Thanks so much for being with us. And maybe we will see you here in Detroit in the fall for the return of Hamilton.
Oh, with I can't. I never want to say I can't wait because I want to enjoy the next 6 months of my life. But yes, I look forward to bringing Hamilton to Detroit and coming for a visit over the holidays.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Come back on Monday. We're going to talk about gas prices. I don't know if you've noticed, but they're going up and have been vexing drivers as sanctions against Russia have taken hold. We'll hear what to expect next. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.